Shimon. Michal Bar Shimon, and we are on term six, session five, session number 35, something like that. For further details, check the, I don't know, for anyone listening on the tape, you already know because you've downloaded it and it has a number on it. And I won't even know yet. Okay. So here we are. Okay, chapter 6, section 2, The System of Providence, page 155.1. We really started at the end of last session, but we're just going to roll over that again. God arranged matters so that his direction of the world should resemble an earthly government. We said that that was to do with a system of bureaucracy and paperwork so that we could recognize and understand what's going on. And this is true of everything in the world with respect to judgment concerning man and his free will, as well as that which concerns the rest of the world and its creatures. Our sages teach us the kingdom of heaven resembles an earthly kingdom. So for anyone on the tape that's a bit scratching their heads about this, do go back to the end of the last session where we talked about that in depth. The spiritual realm therefore contains courts of justice and deliberating bodies with appropriate rules and procedures. God arranged these various tribunals consisting of spiritual beings in particular systems and levels. Okay? So I was walking actually last night by the Manchester Civil Courts of Justice, which is what we call the filing cabinet. And I don't know how many floors the building has, 12. But it's a lot. How many?
12.
I was going to say it's at least 10, because we counted and there's a lot of levels. So if you stand outside the court and you count, there's a lot of these beautiful levels. You can see all the staircase from a glass alcove on the side where you can look straight through the building, basically. And there's many different levels with different courts and everything in there. So too, there's different courts going on in Shemayim. Now, we talked last time about who deliberates on the heavenly courts. Usually, it's a basedin of three malachim, which is a certain layer of malachim, which have power over the malachim of nature, because they've got to be able to overrule nature should something come up in a case where they have to perform what we would call a miracle. So they're malachim with that level of jurisdiction. And then we said, we went off on a tangent with a bell and we went off. We talked about how David HaMelech, David, that he wanted to be judged by God, and how that's mentioned in Tachanun. And we said that actually you can have different members on this deliberating body that judges an individual. You can have three malachim and a soul of a human being who at one stage lived on the earth. Two malachim, obviously, and another person. Two malachim and a soul of an individual that lived close to your generation. Two malachim and the soul of an individual who lived in your generation. And then two malachim and an individual who is still alive on this earth now and deliberates with the malachim. And finally, God and two malachim. And David HaMelech always asked for God because, as we said, God can forgive an affront to his honour, which the malachim and even the greatest tzaddik who's sitting on basically with the malachim simply cannot do. So if an individual ate a pork sandwich and I can't forgive an aveira or a sin or an insult that was given to you, unless someone says to me, listen, I can't bear to see him, please forgive him on my behalf, and we've got like a prior arrangement, I can't turn around and say, listen, you hurt Andy, right? So I'm going to forgive you on behalf of Andy. That doesn't work. Not unless Andy said, I give you. By the way, there is a religion that whenever you do an aveira, you can just turn up to the local synagogue complex, sit down with someone, and he'll just say, yeah, no problem. You're cool. It's cool. We can't do that. There's no confession box in Judaism. There's confession. There's sincere confession. And if you go to a rabbi and say, listen, I've done this aveira and that aveira, what the rabbi can do is help guide you, based upon the Jewish sources, to the best path of repentance that is possible for that particular aveira, utilizing the sources that have been handed down to us. But it is not for us to be able to absolve you for sins that you've done against anyone, be it God or between your fellow. All we can do is guide you on the path of clarity to be able to fix that up. But we can't say, yeah, don't worry about it. God's told me, I can say, don't worry. I mean, he's moichel. He's moichel on that. You can eat the pork sandwich. You enjoy it. Eat the pork sandwich. I can't say that because I don't have it anywhere in the Torah telling me it's okay. The rabbanim can say you can eat pork sandwiches if they think it's okay and they can absolve you. It doesn't work like that. Okay? So that's a system. That's why being the best possible judgment you can get is two malachim and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because a Kodesh Baruch Hu, okay, this question's coming up thick and fast there for the tape. A Kodesh Baruch Hu can say, listen, the damage, the affront to my honor, which you've insulted me with doing this Aveira, which has been Odom Lamakum, I hereby choose to forego, should he decide to do that. It's not a full conclusion he'll do that. But if he does, at least he can. A malach or rabbi, whoever it is, can never do that. Is that clear, right? That's why we want... Okay. There's an Adrian and a Dovey. And is there a bit of a Richard in the middle?
No.
Okay. You kind of, you've got Richard of the Reed at the back that's kind of migrated. Yes, Adrian.
You mentioned that the Malachim were talking and they were saying it could be a situation where the Malachim have to do a Mary call to make sure to change things around. Okay.
Now, that's not necessarily after death. Right.
Okay. Simple question. Do the Malachim have the power to do the miracle, or would the Malachim go back to God?
No, the Malachim have powers over the buttons. What they do is they tell the Malachim who have shlitta, who have authority. That's it. Direct. So the Malach of a wind usually is not allowed to blow over this building. That's it. That's because the building is built in a structure which is stronger. So the Malachim of judgment can say, listen, based upon a thing that we've gone through the whole books, and based on what he's done, that house needs to blow down. And if that house blows down, we can expatriate all of his sins. Those sins that we've got, we can draw a line under this particular case, and at least we can move on. So now I'm going to give you more energy than you usually have to be able to blow down a house, which generally you can't do.
But it's the Malachim that decide that.
The Malachim of judgment have authority to execute judgment at that way, yes.
Because I always thought of Malachim as only empowered to action God's instructions.
And indeed, that's what I'm telling you. The bigger the Malach, the more ability they've been given to exercise God's instructions. God's instructions are, judge plainly. The bigger the Malach, the more God can step away. The smaller the Malach, the less move he's got. This, we're going to hit this when we talk about angels as to their level of free will. We have free will, angels also have free will, but they don't have free will like us. There's a horror Bein HaBachai that talks about it. Basically, they don't have any physical concerns in their free will. Their free will is, how am I going to fulfill the objective that's been sent to me by God? So if God tells them to do this, whatever their leeway to be able to act, that's considered their free will. Some Malachim have so little leeway, the word free will is irrelevant. They can only do this. It's just relevant. The bigger the Malach up the chain, which has authority over others, he can say, listen, I'm going to appoint that particular Malach, not the Malach of wind, I'm going to appoint the Malach of the sea. And it will wash the house away. And of course, people say, why'd you wash the house away? Because really, he didn't know very well, he needed mikvah. He needed absolution through mikvah, so the waters of mikvah, midik and eged midah. Fucking sure, you know, I gave you shlita to go and do it. The Malachim of the angels, the guard, the sarim, the angels over each nation. They're big angels. Kodesh Baruch Hu will not do business with the nations directly, because they wouldn't do business with him. Fair's fair. At Matan Torah, they said, forget it, you can take a long walk or a short beer. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, b'fakasha. In the meantime, I'm not having direct interface with you, I'll have a Tsar. Now that Tsar's job is big. He's got to promote that nation, Japan, China, Korea, in front of God, and all the good that comes to that nation only comes through that Tsar. That's big choices, right? So that angel obviously has a leeway. Dovey. Oh, right, okay, that's very... I love those, I love it. Anyone else got a question like that? Fantastic. Okay, let's continue. The spiritual realm therefore contains courts of justice, deliberating bodies with appropriate rules and procedures. That's where we left off. God arranged these various tribunals consisting of spiritual beings of particular systems and levels. That's where we left off. All cases that are to be judged are brought before these courts, which means whenever there's a judgment, it goes through the civil courts of justice, right? It goes there. That's where it's going to be. And it doesn't happen in the local ice rink, okay? It happens in that domain. And what subsequently happens is the result of their decrees. As is written in Daniel, he brings a verse, 4:14 in Daniel, the matter is decreed by overseers. Now, we're going to go into that a lot. And of course, we're going to start talking about the Jewish concept of the Satan. What is Satan in Jewish terms? It's completely different from Christian terms. We're going to get to that. Okay. Point two. Divine involvement in the spiritual tribunals. What's going on? Now, as Adrian is kind of tapping into here with his question that he asked earlier about how do the Malachim do this, God doesn't just leave this system just walk away. We'll discuss it. God manifests himself in all these deliberating bodies, be they be chaired by him or otherwise. He influences them and makes them grasp the essential nature of each case. So the judgment issued should be, I would add the word, totally, completely, and utterly true. There can't be one shred of data missing. We can't miss any data in a judgment. If there was data missed in a judgment, for instance, I was learning with someone, Hilchos Shabbos. laws of Shabbos. And we were going over the concepts of Boira. Boira, which is sorting. Boira is sorting an undesirable item from other desirable items that are mixed into a mixture of types, such as a bowl of cherries and peanuts, where you don't like the cherries and you do want the peanuts. You can't go around taking the cherries out of that bowl on Shabbos. Now, there is a permissible way of doing it. The permissible way of doing it is taking what you do want, the peanuts, out the bowl, doing it immediately, for immediate use, not for later, tomorrow, or the day after, and by hand, not utilising an actual sieve or special peanut cherry sifting by Amco. The peanut cherry sifter, now available. You can't do that, okay? So you've got to do it by hand for immediate usage. Now, a lot of this is based upon whether or not you like cherries or peanuts. Now, at the end of the day, the real kicker decider as to whether or not you like cherries or peanuts is your brain. You make the choice as to whether you like cherries. Now, God didn't command you, thou shalt like cherries more than peanuts, because they're really cool. He didn't say that. It's your choice. Do you enjoy peanuts? Do you enjoy cherries? What do you want? Now, if you say, really, I enjoy peanuts, then we know if it's peanuts that you don't like, then taking the peanuts out to the very end, you're breaking Shabbos. But if you like peanuts, taking the peanuts out is fine. Enjoy it. Who knows the difference? Only you. After 120 years, you know, go through the whole books. Right, let's talk about that Shabbos where you had that bowl of cherries and peanuts when you went out for lunch. Okay, let's talk about that. Now, what exactly happened there? Hold on. I know the laws. I know what he's going to ask me. If I tell him the peanuts that I don't like and I was taking the peanuts out, he'll grill me for breaking Shabbos. I really like the cherries. I mean, I like the peanuts, actually. Really? Oh, okay, I'll just let you out. I'll just let you go, man. Can't work. God has to know your mentality. There can't be a single shred of something he doesn't know. He can't know what you were or weren't thinking. He'll have to know your subconscious. He'll have to know everything. He'll have to know the mezuzahs, where the stars were laid out, your genetic back, everything has to be taken into account. He has to do that. So the judgment that he casts, or that is cast in the system, is utterly, completely perfect. Because if it wasn't totally perfect, you would be justified. And if you aren't justified, as we've learned in the previous sections, nothing works. It's got to be perfect. See, he's got to be involved to make sure that everything, oh, that's what it means here. It's very, very important. That's what it means here. That we grasp the essential nature of each case, so that you don't get sidelined by some kind of loophole or sub, like a red herring in the case going, why did Jackie walk down the road and pick that up? No, it doesn't matter. That's got nothing to do with it. It's why was he there anyway? That's the case, you understand? And the judgment issue should be true. Now, God himself leads some, but not all, of these deliberating bodies. He can sit as the head basin, the av basin, or the nasi of the basin, as the arch judge of that particular tribunal, should he so desire. He doesn't have to do that. But he's still involved to make sure the entire process is as perfect as it can be, and then hands it over to Melachim. He hands it over to Melachim. This is true in the case described when the prophet said in Melachim 1, which is Kings 1, chapter 22, verse 19, I saw God sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven stood by his right and his left. Now, whenever we see all the host of heaven, left and right, mentioned anywhere in Tanakh, it always means judgment. Right and left, there's a very important concept here. I might as well just throw this in so you get this very, very clear, because I may come back to this in future, called Katega Sanega. Anyone here heard these terms, Katega Sanega? Okay. No, Katega Sanega is like this. A Katega is a prosecuting group or individual which prosecutes in a particular case or somehow damages. A Sanega is a defending force that says, no, this is actually the case and we need to defend. A Katega can't become a Sanega, and a Sanega can't become a Katega. For instance, how does this manifest in a regular... There's a Tosfos in Kedushin which discusses this in the first parak. It says this, Ein Katega Sanega. If an individual is, let's say, Shimon and Rus get divorced. Now, a divorce needs two witnesses. two witnesses. So they sign on the bottom. Shimon calls in, I don't know, Pliny and Almoni. Okay, so Pliny and Almoni sign on Shimon and Rus's up. Now Shimon wants to go and get married. So instead of Rus has gone elsewhere, he now wants to go and marry Miriam. So Shimon wants to marry Miriam. So he calls in Pliny and Almoni to be witnesses on his kasuba, on his marriage contract. We don't allow it. We don't allow it. Why don't we allow it? Because a force which has come to break something can't be a force which has come to build something. Hear the difference? Is everything okay? You okay? Okay. So a force which comes to break something can't be a force which comes to build something. So you can't sign a guy's divorce papers and sign the same guy's marriage contract. Because his divorce paper is a kitruk. That's a katega. That's saying something's wrong here. And I'm an aid to say that he has found something wrong with her, or vice versa. You can't come along and say, this guy now wants to... You can't do that. We'd puzzle at aidus. We'd make that witness testimony invalid. So, ain't katega sanega. You can't have a katega which is sanega. Malachim and things like that act left and right is always a sign of prosecution and defence. Prosecution and defence. Now, the main bulk of prosecution and defence there is are the malachim, the angels which you create yourself through your deeds. Remember, we discussed in this system that malachim are merely impulses, right? Malachim are merely impulses. I've got a spare one for tonight. Do you want to share? Yeah? Malachim are merely impulses. Going up and down, right? Yeah, makes sense? If you are indeterministic, if you're John at the bottom of the system, do you need one, Marcus? Do you need one? Yeah? Is everything all right? Yeah? Okay, fine. Okay, so it's like this. So if John makes an impulse, he can make impulses by doing that action, right? That's how it works. So that's also an impulse. And what do we call impulses? Malachim. When you do a mitzvah, let's say a guy puts on tefillin in the morning, that creates an upward indeterministic influence to the koichos, all the way to the koichos, which brings down a particular flow based upon whatever his tefillin do. So that actual act of putting on tefillin generates a tefillin malach. And that tefillin malach is in your image. It looks like your body, as it were. It's your malach. There's no question about it. There's nothing wrong with the judgment, because clearly you made it. And it's in tefillin mode. Now, if you didn't have a particularly good kavana, or the tefillin weren't particularly right, the malach would be deformed. And that's the malach you'll make. If you had perfect kavana, with perfect tefillin, and you did it at the perfect time, just in the right way, make a perfect malach. With more weight, and you know what I mean? And more. Now, let's talk about the opposite, Chas v'Shalom. Guy, it's a pork sandwich. And I'm talking he's not in a jungle, and he's just come through a plane crash, and he needs to, and it's a mitzvah. He eats a pork sandwich, because he's got a tiver for pig. Okay? That's why he's doing it. Now, as he's eating that pork sandwich, that free will decision, that Avera, generates a trefa angel. That angel is also in the form of you. What you, the kind of angels you churn out. Those angels are the ones that populate the left and the right. There's no argument here. All you're faced with are the malachim you created. It's so simple and perfect. There's not going to say, no, I didn't do that. No, you have to look that one up. There's your malachim. When Yaakov Avinu sent malachim ahead to find out what's going on with Esav, those are his malachim that he made, Thulim and the Torah. The most powerful malachim are the malachim generated by Limud HaTorah. They're considered gold. The Alshach HaKadosh talks about the Mishbosait Tzahav, the golden circlets that framed the two stones which were on the Kohen Gadol's shoulders with the names of the tribes in. Okay? They were on the shoulders. Those are specifically to do with the fact that they all learned Torah, and gold means they're learning Torah. And therefore, God can forgive Israel because all the tribes involved one way or another in learning Torah. That's a reason to forgive Israel. That's Al-Shech HaKadosh, beautiful Al-Shech HaKadosh, very in-depth. I can maybe go into that another time. The point is, the most potent malach you can create is Limud HaTorah Malachim. If you create, right now, you're generating Malachim of Limud HaTorah in your image, which is shooting out the system. You meet those guys again, when they line up and defend you. That's the Mishnah in Avos. If you do one mitzvah, you've gained yourself a defender. If you do one Aveira, you've gained yourself a prosecutor. That's the Kateka Senega. That's how it works. So all the deliberating body has to do when they're sitting there is basically count them up. You know what I mean? And then judge them as to quality. Because some of the mitzvahs you did were suspect. And some of the Aveiras you did were also very suspect. You didn't mean to do them. They were totally accidental. You didn't even know you did them. So they come in the very weak and scrawny Aveiras. While other Aveiras are full-blown bodybuilder Aveiras. They're like, yeah, we did it. You know what I mean? Now, that's going to have to be weighed up in the system. So it's a spiritual concept here. What they're really weighing up is the spiritual outcome of your deeds. The judgment which is set is based upon what kind of spiritual portfolio you've generated to the right and the left. Is your reward or lack thereof? Because you've made so many lochim to do this, you're obviously in chant, you've been impulsing in that particular way. So that's going to be the mainstay of your reward. But the mainstay of your punishment is because these kind of lochim that you've generated, you make it for yourself. That's the Mishnah in Avos. That's the Mishnah in the chapter, the ethics of the fathers that you probably would have seen. It's we say it on Shabbos afternoon. That's the idea. Dov, you have a question? I just saw you put it again, no? Andy, you got a question?
What you described is a very sort of deterministic way. If you add them all up, it's very, because it's perfect knowledge, perfect for the time of judgment. But how does it work out what the correcting action is? What the
we are very good. Andy is asking, okay, that's all very nice, but what do we do with all that?
Yeah.
We're not talking about that now. Okay. We're talking now about determining with total, complete accuracy, not a pebble unturned, the absolute truth of the facts of the case. There's not, you can never hoodwink Shemayim. You could never get away with saying I didn't do it because it's right in front. The actual outcome spiritually is in front of them. That's, by the way, when God said, when it talks about Sodom and Amorah, if the outcry which has come before me is true, I'm going to destroy them. And if not, I'll know. What's this outcry that's come before him? Every time an Aveira was done in Sodom and Amorah, it made a malach that came up saying, destroy them, destroy them, destroy them. That's the outcry which has come before him in the judicial system upstairs. There's an outcry of malachim saying, you can't let this go on. And there's so numerous. After Avram Avinu finally passed the 10th test, right? I always talk about this. I always keep coming back to this. You've probably heard it so many times. I'm like, hey, but you want to know what I'm going to say. So he's about to shech his son. And she says, no, I just wanted to see you do it. Right, now what would I have said if I would have said, Avram, you are awesome, shkoyach, man, that's, woo, and you've been through the mill lately. I mean, what with you only had to do, and this one, foo, I'm saying, what are the first thing I should him say? He said, now I can say you're truly a God-fearing man. That's the first thing he said. Now I can say you're truly, who's he talking to? The Malachan is saying, you're going to choose him? The son of an idol maker? To be the progenitor of the Jewish people. That's who's going to do Tikkun Olam? Him? With Yishmael? How can you do that? Something's wrong, right? That's a Kitrug. That's a Kateger group saying, you can't give it to him. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to get the Torah, the Menachem Magen, don't give it to him. Same thing, now Hashem says, now I can say you're truly good for man, and no one can stand in front of that judgment. I can on high say to all these Menachem, that are accusing against you as to the plan is going. Say, but look at this. This is justification in of itself. You have literally knocked down every peg of justice to say that you have to get this now. You've done this absolutely by the book. There's nothing that all the Malachi have to hold up their hands. Because I'm going to show them, look at this. Same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu getting the Torah. It's the same thing we'll see over and over and over and over and over again in the Torah. The more you look at the Torah, the more you'll see this happening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always dealing with this. He's always interfacing with this. He's always justifying this system. This is vital. You can't have a proper Rosh Hashanah and not know this. Well, you can, but you're just going to be so in the dark. So many of the tefillahs are based upon the knowledge of the system. The concepts, please destroy, you know, the prosecuting angels. Those are my angels. My angels, which are coming up in my image, telling you not to listen to me. Can you move those to one side? Because now I'm begging you for clemency. This is it now. Mamish, unbelievable stuff. Are you about to ask a question or are you just moving your hand? Don't move your hand. Anyone who moves.
Sit on your hand.
So I'm just always, if you've got a question, I want to go. Okay, yeah, my goodness, you'd be up for it. 37, at the back. Okay, now, God himself said that, in Malachim, I saw God sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven stood on his left and right. We've discussed that. Our sages explain that this is speaking of a heavenly tribunal where those standing on the right represent the Senega, the defense, while those standing on the left are the Kitrug, they're the Katega, they are the prosecution. Here we go. Daniel in 7:9 says the thrones were placed in the Ancient of Days, a euphemism for Hashem himself. Hashem was in it, which means he was involved. The judgment was set. The books were opened. This is something Hashem does. The main reason for this is that every individual, this is the reason for Katega Senega, is judged with the utmost precision. You can't say Shemaim got it wrong. The reward or lack thereof that Shemaim pronounced is faulty. They've made a mistake and you have to go, you know, you can't, that's not going to happen. Generally, when a person is judged on the whole as to what type of person he is, what's the first judgment that a person goes through? We did this early section 2. The first thing we want to see when a person is judged is, Adrian, what?
Good Lord.
Excellent, that was brilliant. Whether or not he's a tzaddik or a rasha.
I'm writing you an email.
I was thinking, where is he? I've got to bring him back. And so he said, not only that, he was in the middle of that and he still got the right answer. You've got to give it to him. You've got to give it to him. He's mummish on the ball, right? He's on the ball on white. He's amazing. Okay, so that's the first thing we're going to deal with an individual is whether or not they're a tzaddik or a rasha. Okay? That's the first things first. Now, arguments can be put forth to judge him one particular way. He was a tzaddik, he phoned his mum. As opposed to otherwise, yeah, and he said terrible things to her. for different reasons, right? For different reasons. You can say, well, at least he phoned her. Well, I said, better he wouldn't have. And you honestly think it out, right? You're going left to right. And you have to come up with the absolute emiss in that particular case. Well, she didn't deserve it anyway. You'll have to come through it to absolute point of emes. The same is true regarding a certain person's individual deeds. What did you do on Thursday? What exactly happened there? It might be possible to find fault with a deed from a certain perspective. Listen to this. But often there can be many other ways to view the deed as well. Yes, what that looked to someone as a bad deed. You know, I remember there was years and years and years ago, I think I said there was an advert for The Guardian. I think it was The Guardian or The Observer, some kind of newspaper, which ran on the London Underground, a strip, like a comic strip of pictures, photojournalism. And they had a skinhead. Do you know the one I'm talking about? They had a skinhead who was getting up and then running. And it had different pictures of a skinhead running and he looked really angry. And as he was running, he went to push someone out the way of getting crushed by a falling load of something. And then it said the full picture. Now, the truth is, that's an excellent analogy. In some ways, an individual could be seen, for instance, let's say an individual, tzedakah is a difficult example, because even if you give tzedakah in the worst possible way, it always comes out for good. It's the only mitzvah you can do like that, by the way. The only mitzvah where it doesn't matter how bad you do it, it still works out for good. I'll give the ultimate example, because when we learn out tzedakah, you can learn anything. Let's talk about tzedakah, okay? So where's my pushka? Oh, it's gone.
I know.
Okay, don't worry. Well, fine, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's a pushka. Here's a pushka, right? Here's a toy pushka. It's a toy pushka. Guy, it doesn't matter. Guy comes on the toy pushka, okay? It's going around like that, and everyone's like, uh-oh, it's cough-up time, right? You know when you hit ching-ching, ching-ching, right, it's cough-up, right. Now, a guy opens his wallet and takes out two crisp £50 notes. And he's standing here, and he walks around like this. With his £50 notes. and he goes and puts in the pushkin, making sure there's not a person in the room that didn't see that. Okay, 2 £50 notes. Now, there's multiple, forget the fact that at the end of the day, £100 of stock and £100 of stock, you can't take that away. You can't take that away. So it's still good. Let's look at how we did the deed. How we did the deed was, in a way, now, there's good and bad to view this, right? You could say, that's a tremendously arrogant guy of a way of Dick can do it. What do you see? He's saying, I can give no, I'm giving £100, and you're giving 10p. You know what I mean? And it's like, it makes everyone feel bad. However, it also brings tremendous honour to the mitzvah. You could say, wow, look at that. Would I ever give 250 quid? Have I ever done that? Maybe I should give more. I was in a shul and there was a guy with an esrog that can't be described as an esrog. It was a melon. I've never seen an esrog like it. And he went up to people. It's Mamish and Emstick and Meister. He went up to, it happened to me. He went up to people and he said, let me see your esrog. So people would take out the esrog and go, that's an esrog? This is an esrog! And I saw him do it. He did it to me. I was standing there minding my own business, just trying to get through Chol HaMoed. He said, show me esrog. So I opened it up and he looked at it. I thought maybe he's Boki Nesrogim, he's going to look at something. You know, I want an Eretz Yisrael. As an Eretz Yisrael, I used to, when I Chol HaMoed after Shacharis, someone would come up to me, please can I use your esrog? And they would go around waving every esrog just in case there was more hidden and they wanted a mitzvah of waving all the esrog. They'd go around without a broch and just shaking every esrog. I thought maybe that's what he was doing. So he just looked at it and goes, ah, this is an esrog. I looked at it, I was like, that's not an esrog, that's like a cantaloupe. What is that? Like, you go, that's an esrog. Now, let's think about that for 1 second. Let's think what the guy's doing. He could be showing off to say, your mitzvahs. Your mitzvahs. My mitzvahs. Your mitzvahs. That's true. He is doing that. And you can see that in a negative way. But you could also see that in an incredibly positive way. He's highlighting, he's beautiful. Another thing which is brought in the halacha is, are you allowed to sell aliyahs on Shabbos? This is a mamish halachic problem. You're not allowed to do trade on Shabbos due to Uvdin Dechol, due to weekday activities and the possibility of Kaisev, because someone may come to write down that so-and-so owes such-and-such. But there is, in some synagogues, a minhag, you know, how much for shlishi? Let's do shlishi. Sephardi, okay. Now, chassidim, some chassidim do it there, you know, how much is it now? They just buy the thing off. Now, that means it's difficult. Some people who can't afford the aliyahs don't get the aliyahs. But what, also, you're doing trade on Shabbos. Of those communities that have the minhag, we don't tell them to stop, because the halacha explains it gives honour to the Torah. It's expensive. You want the mitzvah, you pay for it. The Torah is a valuable thing. People value nice things. The Torah is the most beautiful of all things. Show value for it. Indeed, if you're in a synagogue where you can only get £2 or £3 for an aliyah, you shouldn't sell it. Unless, literally, that is all they can raise. Because if you should only attend for a decent amount. So it shows that there's covered the Torah. Now, again, you can see it's good and bad, right? So this one deed can be viewed in a positive way, and one deed can be viewed in a bad way. Now, what Shemayim have to do when they weigh up this deed is they have to look from every single possible viewpoint of all the lenses and come out with the ultimate emes as to why he did that with those 250 quid notes. Overall, should we consider that good or bad? No, it's a mitzvah. Obviously, a mitzvah went in some kind. But overall, the way that he did that, is that good or bad? The damage that came out of a guy at the back felt terrible. So if only I could give and I can't give, what can I do? Another guy said, wow, you know what? I should really get... Look at him. If he's giving, all the more so I should give, because who's he? I hate him. Right? all the reasons, all that will come out in the din. All that will be laid before Shemayim's table like a sheet. Do you understand? So the absolute truth has to be ascertained totally. All this is so because matters of the world are complicated. They're interrelated one to another in different combinations with numerous consequences. In the heavenly courts of justice, all the truly relevant considerations for any matter are brought forward and revealed. Nothing is hidden. Each one to a member of the court, listen to this, who's particularly assigned to that particular aspect of the case. There's going to be a malach whose job it is to find out all the tzedakah this guy ever did in his life and to add it all up. That's his job. Right, malach of tzedakah, what's your job? My outcome is that we call him 2.634. to the power of 4.3 millivolts. So whatever it is. Right, fine, write that down. He's got it. Until the tribunal as a whole has the complete picture and nothing has been omitted, this usually takes 11 Earth months. For a rusher, you give another month. Because you try to find more good. You eke out, you have to squeeze the fruit a little bit more to get another drop, right? Which is why the concept of matseva, of a stone setting, is done at the end of the year. Because we can't say who's a rusher, who's not a rusher. I.e., that's the sign the judgment's over. Right? The case is then judged, each variable given its proper weight, so that the decision that is reached and the decree which is issued is always correct. That's a big thing to say, right? Every God isn't doing this. Now, God could do this in a sub-instance, right? The second the soul goes, it's just done. It's done. You didn't even have... You just did that. That's it. Finished. Nothing. Why didn't he do that? Why didn't God just say, listen, he walks in after 120 and goes, right, you're very good. Nice to see you. You go sit there. That's your place forever. Why God, did God say no? 11... Anyone who's been to court... Well, no, it's a very draining experience. It's a very draining experience. 11 months is ridiculous. Non-stop, every day in court for 11 months. I mean, it's your life. I mean, why just leave us? Just leave us alone. Just say, no, the judge is so clever. He's so all-knowing. Just put him over there and finished. Why is it absolutely necessary? Adrian's got his hand up. Why is it so necessary?
Is this because one of the things in the 11 months is that you're saying Kaddish for the person. Each time you say Kaddish, it's another mitzvah.
So Adrian is saying, look, that there's more mitzvahs still to be accrued and people are saying Kaddish, etc., etc., etc. But please, darling, he knows that. Let's add it all up and say, God knows, had I given you 11 months? Forget, why didn't he just do it, Leon?
To do with that 11-month period.
No, nothing to do with the 11-month period.
No, it's suffering.
No.
It's got an inferiority.
It's not perfect.
Why is it excellent? Marcus is saying it's not perfect. Why is that, Marcus?
Because there's imperfection. There may be imperfections there that is...
Nope. Nope, but you're good, half good. Anyone else got a...
It needs to seem fair like an earth
court. Oh, Jack says it needs to be seen to be fair. By who?
By the person being
judged. By the person being judged. Look, you come in, right? Look, you've all lived. I don't know, like how many years of life, if you add up all the years of life they're in it, it's like couple close to a millennia or something. Think about it, not a joke. Already in this room, right? There's a millennia here. You can't just come into that and go, right, here's a thousand years of hell. And go, yeah, just go sit there. What, that's it? Yeah! That's where you're going to go. That's if we'd sat here and done this for 11 months, look, but you know, let's save some time. But that's where you're going to go. Go sit there, third on the left, next to that beach, that bloke with the blue hat, you're next to him. Really? Yeah, just go take a seat. All right, just go sit down next to him. How did you get out? I don't know, I was told to sit here too. Who are you? My name's Joe. Nice to meet you, Joe. Where are you from? From Morocco. Really? That's lovely. How do you speak such good English? My mother was English. She's still sitting talking. But that guy who sits there, he's not going to feel as if he belongs sitting next to the bloke in the blue hat. So how come I'm sitting there? I have to trust that. I believe that God did. But you don't know to the umkus to the mamishikishkas. You've got to know. You've been issued from the court. You know, you get on the end of the cut. I don't know, like, you know, from the solicitors, you get pieces of paper coming through the courts. I remember I said my wife had to get... she was a question on her citizenship because her father was a naturalised Briton and she had to get part. And we got a sheet from the Home Office and said at the end of the day, if I can remember the Loshen, the citizenship is really a matter for the courts. However, having looked into it, according to this act and this section and this sub-act that was written at that particular point in time, based upon these things, you are British. As long as you hold a British passport, that is good enough to show that you're British, etc., etc. And it was like a whole thing from the Home Office. That piece of paper's final. If someone says, are you British? You just wave them a passport and a letter from the Home Office saying, I'm British. What more do you want? Now, if she didn't have that sheet and someone told her, yeah, you're British, she would have thought, well, what am I? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I don't have final bottom line words. I need that. You need that. God's therefore got to give it to you. Otherwise, you aren't a total master of the good that you're going to be bestowed. That all links back to section one. That section one stuff. You've got to be a master of your good. That goes back to you know, those two guys, who were their name? Those guys that got the lottery ticket? Is it Mark got the lottery ticket? Mark and Tony got the lottery ticket? I can't remember. The Dardicks. It was the Dardicks. It was Paul and Natalie in Samaritz. And they've got this yacht and they're sitting there and they're still sitting there. Then what am I going to do? They're stuck in this time warp now because I haven't taken them into another mushroom. Gotta make up another mushroom where they can get somewhere else. You know? So now that's a problem. You've got to feel 100% that what you've got is absolute. You can sit next to that guy in the blue hat and go, look, a whole file worth of paperwork. So I'm at table 238, seat 236 next to you because this is what happened and 11 months went by. We've just been judged, for goodness sake, you shouldn't even know about it. And it's like, look, this had happened and one mitzvah got me here a little bit further. You have to know so that you absolutely know that you're there. Leon.
Okay. The 11 months are 11 Earth months. That's not 11 months in Shemayim.
That's correct.
So how, what does that relate to in Shemayim?
It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. For us, we would experience that over the period of what we call 11 months. Yeah. There's no clock there. It doesn't work the same. Now, there's seasons there to keep the human mind on check. The Malachim don't need it. The humans that are in Olam Neshamas need it.
Would it feel like 11 months?
Not necessarily, no, because the disembodied soul is more for us that we can keep a track on it.
The judgment. All your friends, all your family, everybody, it's like sitting in the cinema watching that whole thing.
Yeah.
And that is the bit I was talking about. Isn't that the pain and the suffering?
There is in Shah Gamul, Leon is asking, watching yourself go through your life and seeing all the mistakes that you made on a screen is very unpleasant. There's a sefer called Shah Gamul, which is a very scary sefer to do with all these kinds of things, which is taken off the shelves in Yeshiva while I was there, actually. But I managed to get one. Before it was taken off. It's a pretty scary book. It's called Shah Gamul. It's like Gates of Judgment and Hell and all this business. Or Gehenna, what we call Gehenna. It's not hell because hell is just being cast aside. And it says that part of the fires of retribution are seeing just what you've done wrong and knowing what you could have achieved but didn't. And seeing the dichotomy between what you could have been and not is so uncomfortable that in and of itself, but that's too late. But that's not part of the retribution in and of itself at that stage. The judgment stage is the judgment stage. Then there's like how long to go in Gehenna if you need to go, how long in Olam Neshamas, the world of souls, where your place will be there in Gehenna or Gan Eden, Tachton or Elyon. Tachton, lower Gan Eden, is where the soul is still in the image of the body it was in. Gan Eden Elyon is where the soul unfurls and kind of like sheets out and pulls taut so that it has no earthly image at all. That's the difference between upper and lower Gan Eden. And those, where you go, how long you get there. Remember, every year you get an aliyah in Olam HaNeshamas, and that's based on your yard site. That's how you go up every year. Is once a year you're rejudged as to how things have gone with the effect that you've made in this physical world, how that changes your place, until Techiyas HaMasim, where that soul is then put back into a body for the resurrection. I hope that was a nice little summary there.
It should be more simple than that, unless I've missed something here. Because because if you say that every act throughout a person's life, good or bad, is generating a malach
of good, yeah,
good or bad,
yeah,
and at the point of judgment they take sides, it's an easy headcount.
You're right. As I said, in that, very good. Ronnie's asking a question, saying, "Listen, if it's so easy, just you've got bad malachim and good malachim." You know, fish chips, you're out you go, and just come up with a number and finish, you know, just like, you know, leave into a shark tank and finish, you know. As we just said, every deed, though, every one of these malachim, like, let's say an individual did an aveira, maybe he didn't did an aveira, and he'll say, I did that aveira in order to do a mitzvah. Because I had to do this, I had to say that lie to that person, because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. Now, that lie, at the end of the day, was a lie. But as we said, every good and bad deed has to be examined again. Even though it's very clear the good and bad deeds are all there, we have to put them through a lens and really add up what was the value and outcome, intention and purpose of all those deeds. And we have to have every single nuance of the manufacture of those malachim gone through this mill so that when we add it all together, we get a totally perfect, bespoke, custom, engineered judgment only for that individual. Now, it's not just such an easy headcount, because remember, then you'll end up with people kind of being on the same headcount level. I've got 7,000 good ones, 7,500 bad ones. So they're in Gehenna, they're roasting in Gehenna gently. And the point is that they're very different people from different generations that did things for very different reasons, and they've ended up in exactly the same place, and it's not really fair. You've just done it on the numbers. The truth is, you can't really slice it that easy. So you're quite right in the fact that it's quite easy to just look overall and see the good and the bad angels and finish. More good angels, you're good. More bad angels, you're bad. Finish, you know. Yes, for an overall judgment of Hoover Society goes to Russia. True. But not for the intricacy of his exact place in Olam Haba. No. That has to be very, very finely, acutely measured only for that particular individual. It makes sense that that individual had unique challenges and perspectives and phenomenological challenges and environmental challenges, genetic challenges, horoscopic challenges, reincarnation challenges, which were totally unique to him. And those good and bad angels that he's generated have to be viewed in that light. You can't just say it's a blanket rule, you know, good angels, good angel, bad angel, bananas and oranges, you know, what do you want from us? It doesn't work like that. Yes, generally, we judge an individual like that. But then when you get to the prut, when it gets to the specificity of each individual, you have to look through a lens. It's an excellent question. But I think you can see that there's more to it than that very general introduction. Andy.
I'm some concept of a Moloch coming on.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Exactly. I just hit that by accident. Yeah. I know that everyone on the tape is thinking, oh, it's a bad question. No, it's not true. I hit that, but I was putting my teacup back.
These consequences go on for generations.
Yes.
Where's the Moloch? For their future generations.
What a complicated... Okay, Andy, just for the take, everyone says, well, I didn't know the question. Andy's saying, look, you made a malach on the 3rd of June 1976, right? But the outcome of that's not going to come about till 2035. So now, what am I going to do? There are certain mitzvahs and averas and rewards and punishments which are held in escrow. Yeah. Those will be put aside for you, and that's also taken into account. Everything works like that. If you say, listen, I'm going to put £1,000 towards a mikveh, and that mikveh got delayed by 20 years and you didn't survive, so that's going to have to be waited out now based upon the fact that you did that and how much that'll accrue and how many room, that's all got to be taken into account. That's got to be taken into account. You should know the Michtav Eliyahu says the most unbelievable thing. Let's call it Gladys. Does anyone here have a Gladys that's a close family member? Do you? Okay, Gladys. Because I want to say something bad about Gladys. So I don't want anyone to get personally, emotionally attached to Gladys. Okay.
You're on the window.
No, I'm just waiting for the
kettle. He's waiting for the kettle or something. Okay, what's a cup of tea? Gladys got ill. It's Michtav Eliyahu. I'm quoting you, Rav Eliyahu Dessler, Eliyahu E. Dessler. He says like this: Gladys got ill. Now, you know Gladys, and someone phones you up and says, did you hear about Gladys? No, she's very sick. And you go, that inhalation had to be measured out by Shemayim before she got ill. Because if you didn't deserve that, she wouldn't have got sick. You hear the ripple effects of how far God goes? Gladys has got her own reasons why she's going to get ill. Could be genetic, could be environmental. She went to Chernobyl on holiday. Frida jeans. I don't mean her jeep pants. I mean her genetic material, right? Frida jeans. And that caused cancer. Yeah. Or, no, she's done a virus, which now, the punishment of that is this. It's all both. Based upon the severity that she never had to on, and the fact that she went to Chernobyl, and the fact that she has a genetic predilection to this thing, she's going to be struck down with this thing. Now, that knocks but then you're going to get the call and go, are you deserving of such pain? If you're not, it won't happen. Either you won't get the call, or she won't get ill. One way or another, Hashem will see to it. Because you won't do anything that's not perfect like that. Which means the ripple effect of bad things that have to another have to take you into account. How does a Misha Beirach work? We've got these sheets here on the side saying, look at this. Right, we've got a Misha Beirach, right? So we say someone's who's sick, Misha Beirach, someone who's Yaakov, whoever it is, right? We've got to say that may they get a healing in the schar of whatever it is. How does that work? It's like this. This is the mechanism. Listen to me, it's the mechanism. You got 150 people in shul having to wait an extra 3 minutes before they go for Kiddush. They can smell, there's cake. You know that special Kiddush smell? There's a smell when you know it's Kiddush. By the way, don't knock it. The Taz, the Torah Zav, says, do you know why we wait in Musaf for Birkas Kohanim to Musaf? Why not have Birkas Kohanim Shachris? On Yom Tov, the Kohanim go in Duchen, right? But the Duchen and Musaf. Why not? If you've got a mitzvah, Zerizah Magdala Mitzvah, the second you can do a mitzvah, you've got to do it as early as possible. Have you heard that concept? Yeah. If a mitzvah comes to your hand, you can't drop it and go, I'll do it tomorrow. If you've got a mitzvah now, you can't. When Shus Omer comes in, you can't eat till you count it out. So when your Birkas Kohanim comes along, Shachris the first time you can do it, get him up for Shachris. If there is one day we do Duchen at Shachris. Simchas Torah. Because we're so happy. But we're not that happy on a regular Yom Tov. You know what makes us really happy? The Kiddush. It's the Taz. And because people know it's closer to lunch, and the Kiddush makes them happier, and therefore Duchen at Musaf. That's the thing. That's why we do it. That's Judaism. It's aware of the food. It's Judaism. It's real. Judaism is real. It's totally real. It's aware of the food. Simchas Torah is different. People are so happy on Simchas Torah. You can do Shachris. Do Shachris. It's fine. That was a special day. Now, some guy's standing there doing Mishbarach and people come chaylim him. And you can stand there and you're like, I've got Kiddush here. Now, you know what I mean? We've got homes to go to. That damage, that tircha de tzibura, which is a very serious issue halachically, holding up the community, we don't do that. I mean, there's all kinds of things. You take out the wrong Sefer Torah, you have to mish the Sefer Torah to roll it to the right place. We say if he's taken it out, but he hasn't taken it out of the Aron and put it back. But for the Kovel of Torah, we don't want to take it back and stuff. But if he hasn't yet walked away with it, take another Sefer Torah, because Chas v'Shalom, we're not going to hold. You can talk even for Tirchot Tzibur. If a Gabbai needs something for the community, he can speak during Tefillah, which you're not allowed to do, because the community needs it. The community is everything. A Tzibur is a big deal. We're holding up the Tzibur to say, because such and such is ill. That's a stress for 200 people. Is Gladys's illness so bad to hold up another 200 people for another 5 minutes every week before lunch? These people are suffering in a needless 5 minutes. Nope, it isn't. Make a well. If you make a well, we won't daven for her. We can all get on with Kiddush and get on with that one. That's the mechanism. That's how it works. By causing a tircha de tzibura, a hold up for the whole community, a delay, a problem, an excess load, a burden for the community, by saying that's not part of her judgment. Because it's not part of her judgment, take away her pain so that we can just get on with our lives already. Because it's causing us distress. And that distress was not originally sanctioned when you said she should get sick. That's the koyach of Tfilah Barabim. You hear that? Someone stops at the end of davening, does a whole shiur amalas, right? You're like, oh, I was going to go home. Of course, you know, I got my pot needle, you know. I said, all right, Shilam. It's line by line, you know. It takes extra time. That's how it's your time. It's the struggle that you're going to go through. That's how the tefillah, that's what gives it the power to work. Who said you should suffer because of Gladys? I don't even know who this woman is. No, I got to suffer for her. The whole community's got to suffer for her. Yeah, you're right. Tucker, you shouldn't be. Let's make a will. Because of that system of judgment.
Could it be that instead of, like, you know, you're saying that if someone breathes in, like, in their shock, you know, and they experience pain as a result, then that's only because they deserved it as well?
Yeah.
Couldn't it be that they didn't deserve it and then they get paid back afterwards?
And not that he doesn't say that. I can only tell you, Jackie's saying maybe he didn't deserve that inhalation. I'm telling you the whole point of what I'm saying is obviously he did. So really the question is a non sequitur. I'm telling you, if that's what's happening, that's what's happening. You don't need to ask questions like that. I'm telling you the actual source. The source is God would never allow that to happen and say, oh, I didn't take into account. You'll be upset with that. He did. That's the whole point of it. Yeah? Can I continue? So what do we get to? Oh, with I said with numerous consequences, right? In the heavenly court of justice, all the truly relevant considerations for any matter are brought forward and revealed, each one to a member of the court who's particularly assigned to that aspect of the case, until the tribunal as a whole have complete picture and nothing's been omitted. The case is then judged, each variable giving its proper weight, so the decision that is reached and the decree which is issued are always correct. The court's final ruling is then issued by the head of that particular tribunal, be it a malach, be it a human soul, be it God himself, if it's one of the courts which God himself desires to head, then he, God, is the one who pronounces the final appropriate judgment, i.e. whoever's sitting in the middle fills his role as the upbase and is right. We've got the judgment for you is X. Whoever's in the middle has to do that. Even though everything is obviously known beforehand to God. He could sit there and say, we're wasting time, guys. 11 months. You know, like, I can build the universe in 11 months. You know, I built the whole universe in a week. 11 months is a long time. Why waste time? No, because he wanted that. Even though everything's known beforehand to God, he still allows, or I would say even sets up his servants, the host who stand before him, all these menachem that come back and forth, to argue the points of each case according to the truth that one has ascertained. Each one has ascertained. Here's the highlight point. You got highlighters with you? This is the point that I got into the fight with the rabbi about. You've had, because you are so ahead of game plan. I've told you. Some people aren't with us when we highlighted it previously. Page 157.3 is I got into an argument with the rabbi. I told you, the rabbi said, oh no, it can't be. And I said, listen, black and white, what do you want from me? Black and white, here it is. It sounds like if you come from a nursery attitude, which most of us do, most people you encounter are at nursery level understanding about Judaism. They've never gone forward. They can sit for years in learning, but not understand how this system works. Listen to these words. It sounds like heresy, but not to say it is heresy. Listen to this. From all this, we see that it is a fundamental principle. It's a yesod that God does not judge the world according to his own knowledge, but according to the system that he has desired and designed for that purpose. Of course he knows what's going on anyway, but he set up the whole thing for us so that we can feel comfortable and confident that we have the best possible judgmental outcome that could possibly be handed down by any kind of judicial body. You could write in here, contrast with page 171. We'll get to that later. Contrast with page 171, where he talks about a similar concept, okay, is that how God deals with that. We'll do that. Well, that's actually at the top of page 171. If you have a look at it, four lines down from the top of page 171, I've highlighted there, we must say that God subjugated his providence to man's actions, subjecting man to good or evil only as his deeds warrant. I.e. God bases his system on us. The whole thing is only for us. Everything. All the malachim, everything. Because all this system, this whole system is only about John at the bottom and God at the top. And it's sideways. It's layers. It's just God and man having a commune. How actually it happens is generally not that, it's like me meeting Laser at the party and talking about Beethoven. The fact that we're using air molecules and stuff like that, yes, that's all true. The point is that relationship. Unbelievable line. God doesn't judge the world according to his own knowledge, because if he did, none of this would have happened. You wouldn't have any cause of justice. You wouldn't need it. You wouldn't need it. He's doing it for us. So this whole system where he sits back there for 11 months because he knows what's going on. And you have to sit there and argue out. What he knows that Malach was made because he wanted to do this. Come on. The Malach are like left and right. What do you think it's for? We have to open the books and learn it out from this particular pasuk. And, oh, you know, it's like waiting for 11 months. It's for us.
If it's a perfect system, which obviously it is, the outcome will be the same, whether he applies it to acquired his own knowledge, or were they waiting to go through the system?
Nope.
The system was perfect.
Nope.
So you couldn't have
Nope. The system couldn't have a perfect outcome unless he did this. Because we're the limiting factors. You're dealing with a faulty machine, and that's called a human being.
But it's got to be a perfect justice.
It will, but he can't just give it to us.
No, what I'm saying is the outcome.
The outcome would be the same. The problem was in our minds. Yeah. It wouldn't be the same. Us, we'd have a problem. Yes, you're right. It's exactly the same. How do you come to 11 months? Exactly what you said that I could have told you 11 months ago. But I'd have said, I wouldn't have known that. It's all very well for you to say that in your omnipotent infinity, but I'm a finite creature that doesn't get this. You're gonna have to walk me through this like I'm a 6-year-old.
Just wait for the post to
arrive. Right, I had a friend that went to Cambridge to study Cambridge or Oxford, I can't. Wherever Stephen Hawking is the head, he went and studied pure mathematics there. And he had a very good kusher, which they said he had to go and ask Stephen Hawking. And he walked up to him and he's in a wheelchair. He has a pre-programmed set of responses for these things. He was in his first year, bright boy. He walked up to him and said, is it possible I could ask the professor a question? And he just pressed the button or looked at the button and said, go away. And he just kept going. He just leave me alone. I don't do this, right? If you go to a Stephen Hawking Lahavdil, okay? So if you go to a Stephen Hawking lecture on pure mathematics, okay? It doesn't matter how much you think, you're not going to answer anything about pure mathematics. You just aren't. Now, he can tell you, you're wasting my time. But if he's going to be a good teacher, his job is to open the book and take you through to what he knows like you're a 6-year-old. You're the limiting factor, not him. Lahavdil, he has a bet with his fellows as to black holes on Playboys. All that knowledge, where does it go? Is there a black hole? I'll bet you a Playboy. That's what they were betting between each other. That's the morality that doesn't get you moral. You can get clever, you don't get morals. Moral ethic doesn't come from a high level of culture. As we know from the Germans, who were the spitz of their culture, and they played Wagner while we were getting chopped to bits. Okay? Barbarism is not precluded by culture or knowledge. Barbarism is only precluded by an ethic morality. That's why the Torah stresses ethic morality. The whole Sefer Bereishis only has 3 mitzvahs. Teaches you how to be a mensch. You don't have to be clever. God didn't choose us because we're clever. He chose us because of the behavior of our forefathers and foremothers. Their behavior, their ethic, moral behavior is what got us where we are today, which is the chosen people. Okay? It was also arranged so that no case can be judged in any of these tribunals until all the directing angels involved in a particular case are brought before it. You can't say, look, we'll just get the case going anyway because we're going to be late and we've got a lot of cases to get through. If there's any members of the court... page 157, last indent, angels who oversee earthly matters provide testimony to the heaven tribunal, okay? Yep. God set these angels as agents to oversee each thing that exists in the world, as discussed earlier. These agents are brought to the heavenly tribunal... And each one testifies regarding the things that it perceives, as well as what's revealed to it. I saw Plony eat this. I'm in charge of bacon sandwiches. In London, Greater London. If there is such a thing. And I know the Plony ate one because I'm in charge of that. Really, Plony, you ate one. The Malachi in charge said, you ate one. He doesn't have to say yes or no. It's that. What's he going to say? No, I didn't. Well, how come you've made an energy which did eat one? On the 3rd of January. These agents are brought to the heavenly tribunal and each one testifies regarding things specific. Oh, last line. It is only after all this testimony is heard that the case is brought to judgment. Notice this. The first thing to do is to gather the data. We don't judge until we have all the details in front of us. Highlight, if you have a highlighter, the whole 2 sentences, the whole next indent. Incredibly important in this whole chapter. As we've already stressed a number of times, none of this system is needed by God to obtain any information. He knows it all anyway. He knows you ate the pork sandwich on the 3rd of January anyway. For all things were foreseen by him from the very beginning of time. He knew before he created you that there'd be you and you'd be eating the pork sandwich in Marks and Spencer's on the 3rd of January once he invented the concept of seasons and times and months. He's aware of everything. God decreed, keep highlighting, however, in his unfathomable wisdom, that this is how creation must operate. I've written in two words, two concepts, bread of shame and justification. You should already have here bread of shame and justification, top page 159, in that indent, bread of shame and justification. Because unless I know, I've got the paperwork in front of me, saying I'm sitting at that table next to the guy in the blue hat from Morocco, while I'm sitting there, then I've got the bread of shame. Conscious Muffles give me all these like good things, and I'm like, gosh, you know, I get it. And then I've got to justify, I'm not justified in being here. If I'm not justified in being here, I'm not like God who is justified. God doesn't need any of this. But he does, if he wants to deal with you. He can't do it any other way. Now, hold on, Rabbi, isn't that a bit heretical? No. We're learning here that God is totally bound by his own perfection. Can God get any better at spelling? No. Can God learn anything new about maths? No. Can God increase or improve any of his skills? Because if he did, it'd be division. Can God create a rock he can't lift? Come on, guys, louder.
No.
Can God create a rock, a big rock, that he can't lift? Famous philosophical question.
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it because if he did, he would nullify his own perfection. That means there's something he would be unable to do, which means he's deficient. And we know that perfection is complete and absence of all deficiency. So no, he can't. That's the bottom line. You can sit down and scrub your chin in Oxford for 15 years. That's the bottom line. You've got it here in a couple of minutes. Now, I remember last week we learned who came first, the chicken or the egg. Who came first to cut the tire?
Chicken.
Because it gives it luminite. Okay, it's bringing seed after its kind. So it was first. That's it. Finished. You can sit and think about it all you want. Now, it's just philosophy, right? We're Jews, right? We're on business. This is really deep. Could God have made it any better? Could we have made it any better? Who could have made it better? Who? Who? Adam. He could have made the whole system completely different. We wouldn't have had to die. We wouldn't have had to go through this whole judgment. We'd have been born into Olam Haba immediately in Aden. Not Gun Aden, the portico of Aden, but in Aden proper. And that'd be it.
But aren't we taught from the literature that one of us could be one mitzvah which would then bring about redemption for everybody and Mashiach?
Gosh, I don't know. Technically, we're all waiting for the floodgates of justification to open. One tear in one tefillah could technically break the dam. I don't know. I have not been privy to see heaven's ledger where they go, actually, we're just waiting through like four more Shiluach HaKam mitzvahs to come and then we're done. I don't know. Yes, we've all got to strive to do as many mitzvahs as we can, but at the end of the day, the end has been hidden from us, as we learn from the 9th chapter of Daniel, where even the archangels are saying it's a conundrum and a quandary which has been completely obscured from man's mind. Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayechi said, come gather around me, and I want to tell you when the end is. And then suddenly, God says, no, we don't play like that. I know that would seem correct now because all of Israel was in that room. Everyone was there, all the tribes and Yaakov in his ultimate state of Israel. Oh, all this, that's it, it's redeemed, right? He said, this is it. Gosh, this is your beginning. Now you're going to start. Now you're going to start to fix up what Adam originally went wrong. Adam could have made it better, but God couldn't have. How could God do it any better? We're the limiting factor everywhere you look. This stuff, when you learn this stuff, the way we're doing it, it's so obvious. It just goes to reinforce what you'd have come out with logic. If you sit and think this through straight and hard enough, you'd have come out with this anyway, which is what he says at the beginning of section one. If you just sit and think this through, he says in the very beginning of the first chapter, he says, unbelievable, you would never believe that a Jewish child, what you do. But the first page, page 31, their veracity can be demonstrated from what we observe in nature and its phenomena. Through such scientific disciplines as physics and astronomy, Certain basic principles can be derived, and the basis of these clear evidence for these concepts will be deduced. But we won't occupy ourselves with this the long way round. We'll rather set forth the well-known basic principles handed down by tradition, page 31. But if you sit and scrub your chin long enough and think about it, you can't have all the wrong cause telling you. That's a proof positive of its Emmaus, by the way. This is logical deduction that we're the limiting factor and that God can't do it any better. He doesn't have a choice to do so. Well, God can do anything. We're a nursery, right? God can do anything he wants. Make another one. No, he can't. Because if he would have done it, he would have done it the perfect way to start with. That means this one wasn't perfect. What, he mucked up? Pass for Shalom. It's as perfect as it can be based upon the limiting factors that we've introduced. Based upon the fact of what God has allowed us to introduce as limiting factors. It's very straightforward, right? I can't hoodwink you. You've got to check if you don't feel it, if it's absolute evidence, you've got to say, it's just an absolute evidence. But if it is and it makes sense, let's just carry on. Thus the world is managed according to the system. Which is alluded to in a number of places. I'm not making this up, says the Rambam. I'm just taking it from the Torah, for example, the Torah says in Bereishis, 11:5. God came down to see the city and the tower. Scripture is referring to such a deliberating body when it says in Eov 1:6, Job 1:6, the day came when the sons of God, who are the Malachim, arrived to present themselves before God in judgment. It speaks of these overseers. Remember we talked about these are overseers that have to turn up to the Beis Din and say, we saw this, we saw that. In Tochar it says, God's eyes fly all over the earth. That does not mean if you reform or another religion where God now has eyes. There's actual eyes and they're flying. God has these eyes. You'd have a picture where you'd paint the eyes of God flying. How's the show? Look at that. It's called the eyes of God, i.e. this is in the justice tribunal. He's got to bring in all this Menachem to stand in front and say, I saw this, I saw that, I did this, I saw, he did that, I was there when he did that. They then have to present it to the tribunal. The tribunal collates all the data. They give the judgment. God then says, okay, you judge it. If he's there, he'll pronounce a judgment. That's what it means to Isaac. That's what it means to Zechariah. God's eyes fly over all the earth. That's Zechariah 4:10, Zechariah 4:10. This is also what's meant when the prophet said in Zechariah 1:10, these are the ones who God has sent to walk the earth. Where from the context, it's obvious that the reference is to such angels. There are many similar such cases. Go and learn yourself. Salamad, right? Go and learn yourself. All these refer to the system, a complicated design system of direction devised by God specifically to interface with human beings. Highlight, if you've got a highlighter, this next sentence. Very important sentence. The angels who were given the task of overseeing and testifying, that's these angels who are called in by the Beis Din, not the ones who judge. The overseers and testifiers about every aspect of the universe are called the eyes of God. Right? Einei Hashem. They're called Einei Hashem. Now that does not mean, chas v'shalom, that God has physical eyes and the Torah says it's that's what the Torah means. These Malachim that go around saying, right, I've seen that, I've got to testify about that. They're called the eyes of God, as it were. Is it clear? Is it super? Yeah. It has to be because God can't be limited with an eye that can only be seen at one place and not. He's infinite. So he doesn't have an eye with an iris and a sclera and a pupil. He sees and knows all things without. He isn't bound by the physicality of a lens and a retina and a sub. Of course, remember, those have got sub compartments and God's simple. So you can't have components. And the optic nerve and the retina, the choroid layer, and cones and rods and drusen are all components of an eye. And you need them all to work perfectly in their interrelated systems. He's simple. When God reveals himself in one of these deliberating bodies to judge a particular case, let's say as he decides he's going to sit in and he's going to be one of the Dayanim sitting mumish on the bar, as he did with respect to the builders of the Tower of Babel, he says, you know what? I'm going to sit on this on myself. Ooh, okay. The Torah states that God came down to see. That means always judge. Whenever we see or gaze in the Torah, Avraham gazed at Sodom afterwards. That now means judgment. In the beginning, he pleaded for their salvation. Afterwards, he gazed malevolently. Well, gazing is always malevolent. Rashi explains it's malevolent. Why? Because now that they're not going to do Tshuva, he wants them to be destroyed, so that other people will know if you do Averis, there's recompense. There's comeuppance, and maybe it'll scare them into doing Tshuva. So standing under a weak wall, scrutinizing one's own prayers, and asking for another to be punished, are things we don't do. It's a Gemor Brachos Nun Hayomad Aleph. In the Gemor Brachos, in the Talmud, Babylonian Talmud, page 55, folio side A, translating there for those that need the translation. There are three things we don't do with our tefillahs. We don't initiate a judgment process. One is we don't ask for someone else to have a punishment. Don't say, he wronged me, I want you to punish him. Because that means the books are opened on you as well. Sarah did this with Hagar. Hagar miscarried because of it. Sarah lost years of her life. You never come out scot-free if Kodesh Baruch Hu puts the microscope on you. You don't sit under a weak wall. If a wall's about to fall over, and you say, I know the wall's about to fall over, but I'm going to sit under it anyway, and God will protect me. You're asking for the books to be opened right now. You're putting yourself in a situation, Malcolm Sakana. Why should we save you? And you know about it? And scrutinizing one's own prayers. I davened so hard for this, and I said all the right words, just like I've been learned, and then I didn't get what I wanted. What? God didn't get it? He doesn't know what you're talking about? Well, who are you to talk? Oh, well, you just put it in, best as you can, and forget about it, okay? He'll deal with the rest of it. Don't you start, like, you know, taking God to task on that. These are similar cases where you're opening God's eyes to see, as it were, in judgment. He's going to gaze at it. You don't want that. You don't want God gazing at you, right? It's important to realise, however, that the parallel between these concepts and an earthly judiciary only refers to the system generally, I'd add in the word. The manner in which these things are actually done, on the other hand, is nowhere near the same. You don't have a judge in a high court saying, okay, calling the angels who have seen absolutely everything that's gone on. Maybe today we can understand from surveillance, we'd have every single phone call that's brought, every web page that you visit, everything that comes up. We can understand, but still, there's nothing like that. We don't know in an earthly system with anywhere near as much accuracy what's going on, because we don't know the mentality and the psyche of the individual. Nothing is hidden before heaven's eyes. For among physical beings, things are done one way, in accordance with their perception and essence. That's a small e, by the way. He's put a capital E there, which is wrong. And an essence. While among spiritual being, things are done in a different way, according to their perception. Their essence is also a small e. Malachim do things one way. Policemen and detectives do things another. Therefore, the entire mode of operation is very different. Don't start taking a razor and splitting hair, saying, well, who is going to be the clerk? And who's the stenographer? And where's the... It doesn't say it. No, it doesn't need that, because you don't need to record the words, because nothing's forgotten. It's different from Elohim and God, but the general concept is the same. God appointed a prosecutor, the first time he's ever mentioned a divine name, known as the Satan, known as Satan. Notice, if you see the Hebrew, V'hinei Sam Adam Baruch Es HaKatega. See the word Katega? What's a Katega? A Katega is a prosecutor. Kitrug Katega, right? As we said, Senega Katega, right? For who has Satan, it says in Hebrew. Scripture mentions him when it says in Eov, Job 1:6, the day came when the sons of God, these are the Malachim who judge, as we learned previously in Zechariah, arrived to present themselves before God, and the Satan was also, he also came among them. He is the chief prosecutor of the... I don't know, in England, who is the ultimate top-level prosecutor? I'm going to ask this to the solicitor in the room. Is it the Crown Prosecution Service? Who's the top guy there?
The Attorney General.
So if you go up in a case and the Attorney General's there, he couldn't get more of a prosecuting agent than him?
No,
QC is an individual on Queen Council. He's got silk. He's been given a spell. But the Attorney General is the number one prosecutor in the country.
Unfortunately, nowadays, the Attorney General is not even a lawyer.
Okay, really? Okay, anyway, let's call him. Okay, so that's a technical thing. So in England, just for the people who are coming from Israel and South Africa and America who may be listening to this, the top prosecutor in England is known as the Attorney General.
And he is put forward by the Crown Prosecution Service. And if you get him against you, that's as good as England can give against an individual in a court of law. He's a top barrister that you could hit. The Sultan is the equivalent of the Attorney General. Okay? That's his job. Okay? That means if he turned up there, it's a, what we would call a high-profile case, or an important case. It's an important case. Highlight. The function of the Sultan is to seek judgment before these tribunals and bring action, alerting the court to sit in judgment in the first place. Listen to this. If you ever, I've got to tell you a secret. The Sultan is a very important angel because we hear him in many different guises. We hear him as the Yetzirah, which we talked about. There's two Yetziraths. The first Yetzirah is the physical body. If you overcome the physical body, then you've lost free will, right? Like it says, David's legs took him to the base of Medrash. He didn't want to go. But the legs are like, oh, come on, we're going. Oh, for goodness sake, I'm so tired. Legs are like, this is where we're going. He trained his legs to take him to the base of Medrash. He overcame his, he schwitzed out his Yetzirah. There's not free will anymore. Yes, he does. There's a Malach. A Malach will come and rebalance him to make sure there's still Bechira. That Malach is the Sultan. Number two, the Malach that's in charge of death, he's the one that comes to the Melech HaMaveis, the angel of death, heard of him, is the Sultan. And the Malach that comes to prosecute is the Sultan. I thought Malachim can only have one job. We know that each Malach can only be given one job at a time, right? They've got one job, and that's their name. Right? That's their name. They can't. Raphael came with the three Malachim to heal Avraham Avinu from his bris milah. Then he left, and Michael and Gavriel went to Sodom to do business in Sodom. One was to save Lot, and Gavriel was there to, turn the place upside down. Before they need to be, they didn't heal anyone. So he left, his job's over. So how can this angel have three jobs? Answer is, they're all one job. The Ben Ish Chai says, when's the best time to do teshuvah? Right after you've done an Aveira. Why? Let's learn this out. I can't wait to give this to you. This is Mamish, a gem of gold I want to give to you. A guy's sitting there and he wants to have a Wall's ice cream. Now, Wall's was made by the company that makes the sausages. Now, they render down the sausages and they're left with fat, lots and lots of pork fat, which they used to put down the drains. They thought, how can we monetize the fat? So they invented making ice cream, which needs fat. So they blended the pork fat into the ice cream, hence Wall's ice cream. Wall's ice cream is non-kosher. But they're so good. So now there's a guy. Yetzirah comes along and says, who's the Melech HaMaveis, right? Who's really the prosecutor? What's his name? Attorney General. The Attorney General, he's got his like, little white wig, nicely yellowed over the years. And he's got his like guy, and he takes that off. And he puts on an ice cream van man suit. Right? And he comes with a big white transit van. Especially a ding, 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 ding. These are good. I mean, they're dipped in hundreds and thousands and everything. What do you think? In the meantime, he's got, like, if you look in the back, he's got his little wig from the back and the silk and everything. They're all in the back. This is the best ice cream. This is amazing ice cream. The guy's like, oh my gosh, that ice cream looks so good. Yetzirah, right? He gets the ice cream. And he's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to eat it? Without a bracha, obviously, because you can't make a bracha because it's treif. Now, what happens to Yetzirah? Now, the ice cream man's gone. He's gone. He disappeared. He looks around. It's empty. He's flown upstairs. He arrives in the heavenly court, which was on recess. What's going on? Do you know what Joey is eating? A treif Wall's ice cream right now! Flagrating your will! Really? Yes, look! Gonna have to judge this. Yes, we are. He's taken off his ice cream van suit, and that, now he's got an attorney general, not suited and booted, and he's standing there. I think while we're here, we ought to look at what else Joey has been eating over the last 6 months. This is not the first time he has flagrated your will, Your Honour. I think you can see here that he is a habitual Wall's ice cream eater. You know, you're right. How many times has he done it? This is his 3,000th Wall's ice cream. And if you look in the books at 3,000 Wall's ice creams, the punishment, which is unavoidable, is death. Indeed, you're right. Go get him. Thank you, Your Honour. Takes off, sorry for the tape. He's taking off his robes now. Puts on his execution garb, hood, axe, whatever, you know. Flies back down. Hey, Joey. Yeah. Kills him. Takes his soul upstairs. Throws it down and goes, I got Joey for you. That's his job. That's all one job. It's all one job. It's a honeysuckle of a job, isn't it? All one job. Now, says the Benish Chai as follows. This, if this isn't true, then this will be the valid... You know in maths, you have a validator. Validate it. Prove to me how it's true. Let me tell you how it's true. The Benish Chai, Rav Chacham Yosef Chaim from Baghdad, Zochot Salah Kodesh Levrocha, unbelievably, he was like a giant of giants. Unbelievable man. It's literally, he's a chustjog in a lane. We can really say that. His merit still assists us today. He says like this. When, what is his name, Joey, is having the ice cream. Yeah. Is Joey, when he's having the ice cream, does he have another tiver to have more non-kosher ice cream at that time? He's just finished the ice cream. Licked that stick. And threw that in the special Wall's bin. You know, there's a bin that says Wall's. You know what I'm saying? That comes with the ice cream. It's a bin, you know. At that moment, he has no desire to do it again. Do you know why? Because the Yetzer Hara is upstairs bringing the case. His Yetzer Hara is not a Yetzer Hara anymore. His Yetzer Hara is now the Sultan upstairs as the Attorney General. Calling for his death. So that's the time when he needs to be hitting, clapping. Oh my gosh. So when the top of the court, everyone comes in, yes, what's going on? Joey's having his 3,000th Wall's ice cream. Let's have a look. And he's starting to go, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. He's been adjourned. Case adjourned. Oh, shucks. Shucks. It wasn't for those pesky people. The best time to do tshuva is right the second that you realise I've been judged for this right now. Do tshuva there and then. Because that's when you're being judged for it. That's when you're calling the judgment. That's the function of the Yetzer Hara. That's why right after an aveira, you've got no time to do that aveira immediately. Because he's busy doing something else. Prosecuting you. That's the function of the Sotan Yetzer Hara Melech HaMaveis. It's one job. The Attorney General is tempter and executioner. Benish Chai, I'm telling you there. Now, this sounds really bad, right? This sounds like we could do without that. So can we just dodge that whole ice cream thing? Can we just not do it? You know what? Now that I've learned about that, can we take him out the picture, please? Because, woo, I mean, come on. This is also a result of God's goodness. Since even though a person's sins are known to God, he's not brought to judgment until he is indicted and arraigned by the prosecutor. Because God doesn't judge according to his knowledge, but according to the system he's set up to save you. Think about it. If you said, listen, I'm obviously aware of everything, right? So when Joey's having the ice cream, whatever it is, a fab or whatever it is, like the best milky ice cream ever, God knows about it right away, right? So if he's in charge of it, he just kills Joey. But he doesn't. He says, listen, I don't do that. I wait for the Yetzer Hara to come along and prosecute him. Now, that gives a time. That gives a time delay, right? What do we expect Joey to do with that time delay? Tshuva! In which case, I don't need to do anything for... It's a system. So this system of delay is our saving grace in the system. It's not an amazing concept. That's exactly why God doesn't judge it according to his own knowledge, but the system he set up to give us ample opportunity to get ourselves out of shtuch. Look, imagine my I had to reinsure my car, and I came up for renewal. And I went to I hunted around for a new insurance company who gave me the best deal. They gave me the best deal. They said, we'll give you a 60% unbelievable discount. But you have to fit a black box to your car, which tells us where you are, any point in time, how fast you're going, where you're going, and any third party can look that up on the internet. Yeah, that's not my black box, okay? They want to plug a black box into my car like this. Now, I didn't know about this. I had to do research. I'd never known about this. And Tucker, you can go to a website and you can find out where the vehicle is at any time, how fast, the whole thing. Not just the police, not with a warrant, nothing. Anyone. So I thought, wow, but that's a lot of money off, right? It's a lot of money off. Because they know when you plug that in, you'll drive way better. Driver behaviour just goes way up knowing that you're being watched every minute, right?
And someone in the back seat watching.
Right. Now, if you've got that system, and then you park on a double yellow line, and it knows by sat nav you're on a double yellow line, so it immediately calls through and automatically ducts that it gives you a fine immediately. You stop your car, put it in park, bing, boom, you're on a yellow line. It comes out the radio. It's like, what is this? That's your fine. You parked on a double yellow line. That's it. Double yellow line, you parked. That's it. We know where you are. You don't need to worry. We know where you are. So, my gosh, how did you know? I parked it down. I've got no time to say, you know what? I really shouldn't park here. You haven't given me 10 minutes to move the car. Give me a couple of minutes over here. We know where you are. If you're saying God judges it according to his knowledge, then you've got the first second the concept of sin entered your mind, a bolt of lightning comes out and you left as a smoking pair of boots. Finished! Because God set up this system of the Malach, who, by the way, is one month. He has to go be the ice cream man. Take the ice cream, right, go, get changed. Turn up, prosecution. Let's go, excuse. And in the meantime, Joe's on there, he's done Shiva. So he's running back and forth. In the meantime, this gives us opportunities to do Shiva. You see that?
Do we know how long that period is?
Now, obviously, it's on the earthy pit. It's enough for you to do Teshuva. Because we know that the punishment for sin, that's why Chazal tell us at the end of one's life, people get ill. Yaakov was the first person to get ill. At the end of one's life, Kodesh Baruch Hu saves it up and he literally keeps pushing it under the carpet at the end of one's life. So the end of one life, a lot of suffering comes all at once to pay off all those errors that haven't been done 30 years ago. So all the suffering comes. You didn't do it. It can be how Kodesh Baruch Hu organized that we can actually learn the unkus of that inside. Unbelievable stuff, eh? So that's because God arranged this system. Even with regard to this, God set up rules and procedures circumscribing the times and circumstances under which this prosecutor can or cannot function. What day can he not function? Yom Kippur. Hasatan, the gematria of Hasatan, the Satan, is 364, which means it ain't 365. And the day off is Yom Kippur. The one day where we all get called in for appeal, the Crown Prosecutor, the Attorney General, is on vacation. Now that sounds like it's rigged. Because it is. He's rigged it in our favour. Yom Kippur, the Attorney General, is not allowed to work. That's the day he wants to see us all for clemency. There is no prosecutor at that time. The only prosecution could be your lack of putting in your file. You can say, I'm not saying anything. That's the most ridiculous prosecution you can have. At least go and you say all these vidduies over and over and over and over and over and over again. That's tshuva. That's tshuva, right? And the Attorney General's not there. He is on forced annual leave. Go play golf. One day a year. It's unbelievable how well it all works out. It's obvious it's designed, right? 10th of Tishrei, he's on holiday. Come in. I want to see you on the 10th of Tishrei, everybody. Right? What you got to say to me? We're very sorry. Anyone got anything to say about that? Attorney General's on holiday. No! Bing! Okay! It's amazing! The prosecutor wasn't there! It's amazing! The worst thing you can do is just not say anything! Indeed, just even if you don't say anything, there's an air of forgiveness in the air! Just Yom Kippur, even if you don't turn up and you don't say anything, you still forget. It's just Yom Kippur! A good day not to have a pork sandwich.
What happens if you don't keep pork and you don't follow it?
What happens then? Hi, then you lose the benefits, don't you? But all Clally Swerf, all Clally Swerf are Collie Swallow Rosem Zelazer. Hopefully we can stuff him in saying, look, but my uncle did my co-. But again, it's not a good, I wouldn't say don't keep Yom Kippur in the fact that everyone else is. Don't do, it's like saying don't turn up to court on the one day. But what happens if you don't turn up to court on the one day the Attorney General's not there in order to play? You don't turn, you tried in absentia. The truth is it was such a day of forgiveness for everyone that you could, we'll bundle you in. But I mean, it doesn't look good, you know. Wherever you are, fast if you can, you know what I'm saying? Wherever you are, fasting is derisa. Going to shul is derabonon. If you're going to drive to shul Yom Kippur, stay at home. Stay at home. A rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, with ordination, a yoro ordination, telling you don't go to shul Yom Kippur if you're going to drive in. For whatever reason. Stay at home. Don't keep Yom Kippur by breaking it. Your Yom Kippur is fasting and staying at home is much more important than fasting and going to shul or not fasting. If you say, listen, I go to shul, but at the end of the day, I'm going to have to drink a little bit, even by shirim. Stay at home then. Keep the fast. Keep that day. Daven at home, if that's the case. Don't break Yom Kippur to keep it.
What about the Shabbos?
So, again, you don't... I wouldn't tell anyone to drive to shul on Shabbos.
I know, I'm just saying.
But, again, but today we allow... If we allow... Look, at the end of the day, if they're going to drive anyway, there's a whole thing in Hilchas Kirov as to what to do. Are you allowed to invite someone over knowing they're going to drive? You can't knowingly do that. That's a whole thing halachically. You can ask me about that separately. There's left and right to what to do on that. So they're going to be driving anyway, then better they drive and come to you. If they're going to be driving out to the cinema, let them come to you. The thing is, are they coming to you dafka, or are you saying, you have to do that very carefully.
So but wouldn't it be better off to
they're definitely, they would be halachically, but if they're going to be sitting at home watching movies and eating treif, let's say, better they experience a real Shabbos at a house where they're going to get Zmiris and Torah, and we'll bring them into the fold of Shabbos, maybe over a period of time that will help them keep Shabbos. There's a whole cheshbon that goes into that. But Yom Kippur, this thing, again, it's also derisa. Shabbos is derisa as well. You're right. One's derisa, the other's derisa. Scriptural and scriptural. You're quite right. But again, you don't break something to keep it. Okay? Even with regard to this, God set up rules and procedures circumscribing the times and circumstances under which this prosecuting function. Oh, our sages refer to one such rule when they say the sotan only accuses in times of danger. They also allude to this when they teach three things recall a person's sins. There are many such examples. I just want to do five very quickly. I know we've got 2 minutes. All these concepts of judgments, both in general and particular, follow a system of rules and procedures decreed by God's wisdom. Now listen, this system also includes specific times for judgment. As for example, those referred to by our sages when they say, the world is judged at four times a year. Now that is a Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tes Zayin Omed Aleph. That's the Babylonian Talmud tractate Rosh Hashanah, which I'm going to translate as Rosh Hashanah. Page Tes Zayin, okay, which is 16a. Pesach is judged for the times of grain. Shavuos is judged for fruits. Sukkos, we judged for water or rain. And Rosh Hashanah, each individual's actions are judged. There are also other such rules, such as the one mentioned by our sages when they teach a king enters to be judged first before the feud becomes great. Because otherwise you say, all these people did this, we're very harsh with him. We likewise find a rule that grain undergoes two separate judgments. I don't have time to go into that, but you can see there's different times. The Shem said, now's the time to judge this particular thing on earth. It is to this judgment issued by these tribunals that our sages refer to when they say between before the sentence is imposed and after the sentence is imposed, before we've rejudged for grain, fruits, water, each individual, and after we've done it for that yearly cycle. There are many other examples. We can see from this that this system of judgment has specific days and times in the year when it operates. Because it's a system. God says, now's the time to judge grain, Pesach, the Omer, all that business. Sukkos, the water, how much water there been, too much, too little, flooding, not enough, drought. That's it. Now, although Rosh Hashanah is my individual, how much water I'm going to get individually, that water has to be coming from the sukkos from the previous year as to what I'm going to get in the sukkos from the next year as to what's going on, because all that has to weigh in from the water because we're judging water specifically. It's a complicated, involved system. I may start off next time by running over that last bit again. But apart from that, I hope you've got a tremendous amount more now than we had previously. Have a fantastic week.